It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why we need two microphones. Damn it, people. Not even going to make this up. Literally started the podcast, hit record, was recording without my mic. I don't mean I was not near it. I mean it was still packed away in its special carrying case on the floor. So that's the kind of night you have to look forward to here. So enjoy that. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that is slowly transforming all the other podcasts in the world into it. If you pay close attention, you may notice occasionally in the opening jingle for a podcast, you'll hear, and then gives up. Ezzy's been making a lot of guest star appearances, things like that. So get ready for that. It's going to be like when Taco Bell won the restaurant wars in Demolition Man. So, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 270.
That's good. Something was unnerving about being numbered in the 260s. I don't know why I didn't like it, but I'm glad that we're here in the 270s now.
Okay.
I'm just going to say that. So, let's explain to people how this show works. Well, first of all, we have two mics. Because there's two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And
but that wasn't always true.
Contrary to the
live show. We did have one mic for a long time.
Yes. Contrary to the live show that we do when we're touring, neither of us sits on the other's lap during just the regular recordings. So we need two mics. Anyway, we have a hat. It's magical. In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People like yourselves write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its egg-laying servants, fight a never-ending battle for truth. No, wait, that's not right. We, its egg-laying servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the show.
It's quite a surprise when that egg-laying thing started.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was funny when it happened to you, but yeah, then later,
mm-hmm.
I knew remorse. Still, cuts down on the grocery bills. Anyway, how have your 2 weeks been? Also, why does my cat go insane every time you show up?
I don't know.
She really likes you.
They've been good. I've been getting a lot of work done.
Nice.
Yep. Have we talked about my big project, or is that something I'm still being weirdly cryptic about?
Is this the Tesla-focused alternate universe?
Well, that's one way to describe it.
Though. Yes, then we have talked about it.
Not entirely accurate. Well, I'm developing it as, I think, as I've said, it could be a lot of different things. It could be a comic book. It could be whatever. But I'm just for the sake of having a direction to go with it, I'm developing it as if it were a television show.
Oh, I thought you were going to do it as a series of comical mouse pads.
Well, I originally thought I would do it as a radio play.
I think the last time I heard about it, that's what it was doing.
But then I thought, nope, there's just too strong a visual element to this. I can't do it that way. So I decided, all right, well, rather than vacillate about what it's going to be and then I don't ever get anything done with it, I'll just decide, fine, TV show. I'm going to decide, you know, how many seasons it's going to be, how many shows each season, how long the shows are going to be, and so on. So I'm developing it as if it's going to be a four-season show with 13 episodes, hour episodes.
And two movies afterwards when the fans demand it?
Actually, I have thought that it might be a film or maybe even a trio of films when it's done. But I'm not really worried about that right now. So I've gotten to the point where I've developed it far enough along that I'm working on what would be the pilot.
All right.
And I've been making some... It's been harder than I thought to write the pilot, because what I did was I sort of did an outline of all four seasons. And I did a...
Sorry, in deflecting the microphone, I just coughed at you. I apologize for that.
That's right. I did a...
I'd rather get him sick than the microphone.
I did a more careful outlining of the first season. And then sit down to write the pilot. And I thought I had a sufficient outline for the first, well, for the pilot. But it turns out I didn't. I mean, when I put everything into the script that I had outlined, there was like a significant amount missing.
All right. But do remember, with commercials, an hour-long TV show is only going to be about 42 minutes, so you've got a little...
No, I understand that, but I'm not writing it that way. I'm going to go ahead and write it like it's a 60-minute no-commercials kind of thing.
All right, but then we're going to have to edit out all the sex scenes and stuff just to make airtime, regardless of the rating on it.
Yeah, I think I can deal with that. So anyway...
He gave me such a dirty look.
Did I say what the name of the series is ever? Maybe I did.
I want to say Walter.
No, it's called Constable Blue Hawk and the Amazon Air Patrol.
That was literally a joke for one person.
It's supposed to be, just as it sounds, it's supposed to sort of, the visual is supposed to kind of be...
Sky Captain, yeah, in the world of tomorrow.
Kind of, but I'm looking for something that's a little, well, it's hard to describe. Let's just say that's an element of it. It's about a Constable Blue Hawk. This is a woman who was born in in 1831 in the United States is an organized territory. It's where Iowa is today, like Dubuque area. And her father is an American of English descent, and her mother is an Iowa native person. And there's historical reasons. I mean, back in 1881 in that area of what is now Iowa, that kind of thing did happen and whatever. I won't go into all the details. But she eventually is trapped in a cave-in, in a cave, and preserved by the radon gas. And she is retrieved and revived 200 years later. And this
becomes a lawyer.
This is... For people who already know, this is exactly what happens to the original, Buck Rogers. I'm totally stealing that story from them.
Oh, I assume this was Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer you were stealing from.
In the world she wakes up in, it's a very different 2031 than we're going to experience. It's an alternate reality.
To say nothing of how different it is from the 2031 we've experienced already.
Yeah, it's an alternate history that obviously the alternate history she wakes up in. Seems like I have talked about this before on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Have I? Well, I don't need to bother.
Sorry, when I said, yes, you've spoken about it before, that's what I meant.
Well, all this detail is what I mean.
Yeah, no, the setting was the thing you really talked about.
Oh, okay.
This I knew it was a... Buck Rogers ripoff, just for a quick cash grab, and you talked a lot about sort of the alternate historical lines.
I don't remember talking about it on the podcast. I talked to you about it a little bit off the podcast. I thought
you'd talked about it on.
Oh, maybe I have.
Tell us,
listeners. I don't need to bore everybody with it.
Well, you don't have to stop them from responding. We won't be able to hear them anyway.
Well, the point is, this is the thing I've been working on, and the point of departure is 1831, and there's all kinds of. Davy Crockett was president in 1832 and all this other stuff. And, a different... the fossil fuel industry wasn't as big a deal in this alternate reality and so on and so forth. And so Blue Hawk has to come to terms with not only waking up 200 years later, but waking up in an America that she hoped would never happen, because she, in spite of her father being American, she didn't like America or Americans, and she wanted to go to war against Americans with Black Hawk, which in our reality happened in 1832, and in her reality that never even happened. So she's not happy about the future she wakes up in. I mean, aside from the fact that all of her friends and family are dead, it's just not the future she thought there was going to be for North America, I guess. So she has to come to terms with that. And also there are solar system. In this alternate reality, the solar system has been settled by humans, and economic and political winds are changing. And so everybody's dealing with that. So
she loves you so much.
No, she doesn't. I don't know what
she's
her deal is.
She's just rubbing on you so much. It's, oh, my God.
It's not love. It must be.
She's up on his leg, and she's just rubbing the hell out of him.
Must be something about my.
No, that's what she does. That's how she is.
So anyway, in the pilot episode, it's all about the first half of it is in 1831, and the last half of it is in
New Chicago.
2031. And so, yeah. And it's been fun to work on. I hope that it comes to something other than just this writing exercise, but I guess we'll see. Once I have it developed far enough that I can actually
then
pitch it to somebody.
We'll go and start selling it around L.A. We'll take a week, go around, make some deals, press some flesh.
I think it's got a lot of potential. I think there's
some weed.
I think there's a lot of things about it that
are some coke.
Are different than what people have been doing. I think there's a lot of things about it that might be timely, yet, you know, 20 years from now won't seem outdated. I don't know. I mean, I've put a lot of thought into it and a lot of work, and obviously it's not even close to being done, but I mean, I think it's an idea that if I did pitch it to somebody, I think it would...
That time wasn't it.
I think it would really work well.
I'd buy it.
You haven't even read the script yet.
I would buy it on the sale you've already given.
What?
It's enough for me.
I haven't really figured out what the elevator pitch is.
You have to co-produce it with Dan Harmon. Just because I want to watch that.
But that's mostly all I've been doing. I mean, we did see...
Civil War?
We did see Civil War.
I still have not seen Civil War. I got to get to that because the producer's already seen it. Producer saw it a week ago, right now.
But not, I mean, you know, otherwise we're just kind of watching the regular shows we've been watching. The fall shows are about to end. You know, mm-hmm. Flash and Green Arrow and...
Yeah. We are, because Trish has been gone, we are one episode behind on Winona.
Bates Motel. It's almost done.
Yeah, no, I've actually seen commercials about how that... Is it their final?
No, it's their penultimate season.
I believe their teasers basically seem to be focused around they're pretty sure everybody's going to hate how the season ends.
This season has been phenomenal. It's probably the best season yet. And
Through this podcast, I have learned of other people that watch that show who have said the same things you have, but then also, insofar as they know me, they're like, be really careful.
Yeah.
But I feel like you know me really well in that regard, and so
I'm well, still trusting what you. I always
I mean,
tell,
I won't, who knows when I'll get to it.
What I always tell people is the first episode's pretty rough. And, I mean, we almost didn't even watch it after the first episode. But if you stick with it,
He made a promise to Anthony Perkins.
It's really worth it. It's just so well made and so well acted, so well written. Everything about it is just so well done. And this season's the best of all of them so far. So yeah, we're enjoying that. Let's see what we've been watching. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh wow.
2. We've been keeping up on that, and we happened to see Civil War, you know, before S.H.I.E.L.D. The next episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, so when,
yeah.
In S.H.I.E.L.D. when they were talking about it, we knew what they were talking about. It wasn't a huge...
It never is. I remember we saved the episode so we could go see the second Thor movie. And it was just like, oh, look, it's on the same set. Oh, look, we had a couple of lines. Oh, look, now we're actually going into the plot, and it has nothing to do with this.
Right, right.
It's they're all just like nods and stuff. Yeah.
Let's see what else Vikings has its mid-season break, but their mid-season break is they're not coming back till the fall, so I don't know how that makes it a mid-season.
Pretty
break.
Big break.
What else were we watching that's been done? Oh well, Penny Dreadful just started back up, and so we've been watching that, which, right. And so far it's pretty good. What else? I don't know. That's not very much. I mean, they don't know what's going to happen to Supergirl still.
Yeah, yeah.
I've read that they
not in the story, guys. It's still under debate.
People are talking about, well, you know, maybe CW will take it. Okay, but then they're
yeah, because they also own CW.
Yeah, CBS does. Right, but they're also saying that somehow moving to CW will make the budget for the show go down, which might make the quality of the show go down.
Yes.
Which I
but that's also the weird. Motivation for why they'd move it, apparently. Apparently expense is a big issue. And it also means potentially that they move to filming it
in Vancouver.
Yes, which means they probably lose Calista Flockhart, which yeah, to other that. Viewers is a very sad thing.
Yeah, I saw that too.
She's a very popular character for people who like
that show. Which I don't
understand
because I think she's the worst part of it.
In general, it's a very polarizing show. Very few people seem to be so-so about that show.
Although, I do have to say, if they moved it to Vancouver and she's like, okay, well, I'm done. Even though I don't like that character, it would be very jarring for her to just suddenly disappear or be dead or some dumb thing like that. Or be replaced by some other actor. That would be weird.
That's what I want them to do, is I want them to replace it with somebody completely different and just pretend it's the same character. Or have, like, one scene where, like, she drinks a potion and then, like...
she drinks a potion.
Yeah. That I would start watching the show if they did that.
But, yeah, as much as I don't really care for that character or her portrayal of that character, I wouldn't want to see her just vanish or do something like they did with Wonder Woman where... You know, she suddenly lives in California and works in a different office with different people, and they don't have any explanation.
And Lon Wagner plays his own son, who's also a secret agent guy.
Yeah, this is weird.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But the one good thing about moving to CW,
like if a satirical show did that today, I would say that was genius. But yeah,
the one good thing about moving to CW is maybe they'll drop the whole the Flash and Arrow people are in a different universe routine. Which they could do very easily, because in the comic books, they have the multiverse, and they have some stories where a couple different versions of Earth like smash together and become one. Well, they could do that and fix that whole thing about her being an alternate universe, which I don't even know why they did that, except that she's on CBS and they're on CW. Seemed dumb, but. I would.
Or because they have plans to bring in a different Supergirl somewhere else.
Maybe. But whatever. So yeah, I mean, you know, just working on stuff, making very good progress, so I'm happy about that, and just watching TV, that's all. Nothing else to really report. Playing Fallout, too, I guess.
Oh my god. I really need to try and finish it this weekend. I'm hitting burnout on it bad.
Now, why don't you talk about your 2 weeks? We probably should have started doing that 10 minutes ago.
Let's see. Went and saw Keanu.
Oh, yeah, you were really excited about that.
I was. I was disappointed.
Why?
It wasn't that good. Yeah. It's okay. It's fine. I enjoyed it just fine. I laughed. It was fun. The cat is way less involved in it than you would hope. That made me sad.
Than you would hope?
Yeah, the cat's awesome. The cat's why you see it. Yeah, you're dead inside about cute animals. And then the huge thing is what the critics basically already said. There are two things that are really funny about Key and Peele. One is the two of them just have great chemistry and they're hilarious together. And the other is their concepts are really clever. Their sketch comedy show is funny because they come up with really clever things to do sketches about. That did not happen here. Like, the initial premise that we all know already, where, you know, Cat shows up, he names it Keanu, it's actually a gangster's cat, and people come looking for it, and they get involved in scary criminal hijinks. That's a creative idea. But nothing in the movie, like... bites like their stuff does. It's all just, it feels like somebody wrote a movie that they are in and they are doing well in, but it, like, they didn't write it. Mm. And that's very disappointing. It's just not that interesting. There aren't a lot of good set pieces. It gets really bogged down in action that's not cool enough to be worth it, but it's not, but it takes away from being funny at that point in the same way. But I should say, this is all very nitpicky. I did enjoy it. I thought it was pretty funny. I just wanted so much more from it. So I don't know that I recommend it, but I don't necessarily recommend people stay away from it. Meanwhile, however, though, I did see a movie on Amazon called Kung Fu and Titties. Actual movie title. Featuring the brilliant character actor Bronson Pinchot, which I assumed was just in a throwaway cameo for money, but no, he is in two different roles, each of which appear in multiple scenes. He was really kind of involved. But I do not recommend that movie. I specifically recommend no one see that movie. Mm. I will give it credit for saying, though, that it does deliver on its title's promise, though I feel like most, if not all, of the kung fu was fake. But yeah, don't see that one. I mean, not you, people. There was never a question you were going to see it. Other people, don't see that one. It's awful. I saw half of a musical. Like, a live theater musical.
Really?
Yes.
Why did you only see half of it?
Well, because we left.
Well, yeah, obviously.
No, the place could have burned down or something. You don't know.
In which case, you still would have left.
No, I could have just hung out in the fire. Maybe I passed out and they were scared to move me. So I'm there, but I didn't see it. But no, we didn't. No. So, Neuroduck and Coffee and I went to see the Coralville Community Theater, Circle Theater, I think it's called, production of 1776, which is a musical about the Continental Congress in 1776 and the creation of the Declaration of Independence in specific. And first, I do have to say, the Coralville Community Theater group is amazing. They did a brilliant job. The music was done well. The vocal ability of these community theater actors is unbelievable. Like, they sing really well. The costumes were gorgeous. The sets were put together wonderfully. It was an incredibly good production. The play just sucks. Apparently it won the Tony for best production in, like, the 70s. I don't know what year. It's, first of all, we left at intermission after the first half. The first half was an hour and a half. If it had just been, like, an hour and we were going to have another hour, we might have stuck it out. But the idea that, like, we were going to have to watch another hour and a half, the musical is noted for being, having the record for the longest period of time between musical numbers of any musical. And that's not necessarily something you shoot for. The first half, especially near the end, is really preoccupied with how much the Founding Fathers like having sex. Specifically with their spouses, but yes, it's all about how much the Founding Fathers really enjoy sex. There are like three songs in a row about Thomas Jefferson shtipping his wife, and he's not even there for any of them. And to answer the question asked by a member of my gaming group the other day, no, they aren't even cool enough to stay shtipping. They're more vague than that. It's just a dumbass play, but I feel bad because they did a really good job. I was really impressed. So didn't see that second half. But I know how it ends. That's another thing. Like, yeah. If there was any suspense.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But I'm like, I know how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, still haven't finished Fallout 4. Needed to really do that. Because I'm getting tired of the game. Although I went to go finish it and discovered new quests I didn't know were there. Mm. Found out there was a whole part of the Institute I'd never gone into, and there were quests in there.
Mm.
I've been writing.
Yes.
In fact, the last time, well, okay, last week, which we didn't record then, because I was dropping the producer off in the Quad Cities, the next day, the Friday after, so, what was it, the, I don't know.
This past Friday, right?
Yeah, this past, so the 6th, I took the day off specifically to write.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed this, I had the vision. No, I had an idea that, like, drastically reshaped the whole book. Didn't change the story per se, but it just sort of changed the whole way I wrote it and the way the story arced and things. And so I suddenly was like, I want to start over. And I discussed with you, like, should I just follow the the draft out and come back? But it seemed like duplicated work because I knew I was going to change the rest significantly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So obviously it would have the impact there. So it seemed kind of silly. But so I did do it. Now, to remind you, I had about 16,000 words in my first draft, which by my guess was about halfway through the story. So I had major length issues, clearly. But so Friday, I worked on it, and I worked pretty hard. I was a little worried that I would just, like, say, fuck it, and screw around and everything. But I put at least a good, solid 4 or 5 hours of straight-up writing. I'm not even I'm not saying 4 or 5 hours during which I wrote a lot. I'm saying if you just had a stopwatch for the times I was writing, it was probably 4 or 5 hours that day.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And I got about just barely over 8,000 words. And felt way better about it.
Mm-hmm.
And was about half as or about a quarter of as far in the story. So, but by the transitive property or whatever, I think I'm about doubling my word count in terms of beats in the story and how much I have. Now, unfortunately, until last night, I had not written again since then.
Mm.
I went several days. I was a little stuck. This is a problem. I used to have this a lot when I was GMing, too. I know what's happening now. I know what eventually is going to happen. I need some connective tissue in between, and I have no idea about what might happen in between.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yep.
I have this problem a lot. And so that's kind of been bugging me recently. Last night I was exhausted. But I told myself I had to write. So I wrote, but it was about like 900 words, of which 250 were copy-pasted out of the old draft. So I barely... But I did technically do something. I started through on a line that I think will work. I still keep having new ideas a lot, but so far nothing that really requires me to be retroactive.
Mm.
I did, however, encounter something interesting that probably happens a lot with, especially with fantasy authors. So I'm planning some stuff out here, and I'm like, okay, I want to do, you know, XYZ, but I can't, because I'm like, you can't do that because you've established this particular concept of your mythology operates under these rules, which contradicts what you want to do. I'm like, ah, oh, shoot. And then I'm like, wait, I just made that up. I can change it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, that's right.
And I was like, oh, yeah. And especially, like, it, frequently it's one where it was just an assumption in my head, but, like, it hasn't come up in the story or anything. And I'm like, I'm treating it like, no, clearly that's how it worked. No, you just invented that.
Yep.
You could totally change your mind while it's still
a
draft.
Well, I mean, you know, what I'm working on is arguably science fiction, but I've changed all kinds of stuff, even... Because a lot of times when you're writing science fiction and it's sort of a futuristic kind of thing, alternate reality kind of thing, you kind of get locked in a certain way of thinking about it. And you think, you come up with these things like you're talking about where, okay, well, I want to do this, but it contradicts what I've already done. So now I have a choice. I've got really three things I can do. I can either say, well, I'm just not going to do that because it doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. You can work the heck out of it so that it does fit, mm-hmm. or you can go back and change this rule. Yeah. You know, it's because you just made it up. It's not like it's out there now.
That was the thing.
And everybody knows that you've, like, it's your
clearly
thing.
Clearly, this is how this works. I haven't, no, mm-hmm. I just said that.
Yeah, nobody's even seen it besides you. Mm-hmm. So you can make it whatever you want. But sometimes that has its consequences too. So, like, how many things do you already have that little rule hooked up to? How many little plot turns rely on that rule being true? Because if you change that rule, well, now this plot turn either doesn't make sense or it's just not as interesting anymore.
Yeah.
And you have to rewrite the whole thing. So there's a lot of things to weigh, but it's not just with fantasy writing, even science fiction writing too.
I didn't say sci-fi because certain, like in hard sci-fi, I think you'd have to avoid that. But yeah, if you're doing sort of pulpy things that where you're sort of still making up the science or whatever, then you can get.
But I mean, I think even in hard science fiction, there's so much of a speculative aspect to it.
That's true.
There's always going to be something that you have to change. And also, in any fiction at all, even if it's not speculative fiction in any way or genre fiction in any way, you have rules about how characters relate to one another, how a character acts, or how the town deals with things, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always some kind of arbitrary rule you're putting in place about characters, character arc, community, culture, whatever, that, you know, you can always change, or, you know, it doesn't have to exactly be that way. So, you know.
Yeah, and I'm doing a lot of trying to figure out what are the immovable things, what are the things that are the tent poles that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, what's the point? What are the important things that I want this to tell?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not even plot points, but just like what is the point of writing it? Like, what is the message I'm going for? And, you know, it's going to be, you know, dime store novel genre fiction, but I'm like, there's still a point to it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like every single Disney movie's point is be yourself. You know? even the movie about not being racist was really about be yourself. It totally was. Zootopia was totally that. But yeah, this the thing I had where I was like, you just made that up. It was so, like, it was not of significance. I had not actually written it anywhere. It just had been in my head for a while. I'm like, yeah, no, I think it was just some, like, limitation of some supernatural thing. I was like, no, you can't ever do... I was like, you just decided that. Like, you could change it right now. I really can't wait until my first book is a huge hit and I'm working on the second one. Because I really hate that I'm, like, avoiding talking about any story or character elements or anything like that. It's really annoying to have to, like, dance around. I can't just tell you people what's going on. But see, once I've got a first one, then we got a framework.
Mm.
But it has to be popular because I don't want to spoil it for anybody. So it has to be hugely popular. Everybody who listened has read it. And then we can sort of talk about the next one.
Yes, that'll be nice.
Yes, things will be a lot better after that. No, I'm actually pleased once I just start getting some editing, then I at least can discuss things with the editors.
Well, in the story crafting process, the thing that I like the best is when somehow, I don't know when it happens or how it happens, but there's a time before in the process where it doesn't matter how much you've imagined these characters or situations or places or anything else, it doesn't seem in any way. There's no substance to it at all. It doesn't seem in any way real. They're just they're barely even ghosts floating around in your head. But at some point, it solidifies into something that is as real as any other fictional universe that you read about or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Because, no, I absolutely do, because I'm struggling to get to that at this point. It still all feels very two-dimensional.
Yeah, like when you were a kid and you used to make up little stories and play acting with someone, versus if you have Star Wars action figures and you're acting out scenes from Star Wars. You know, one seems like not as real because you're just kind of making it up off the top of your head, and the other one seems like, no, this is a real thing out there, this story. Well, in the process of crafting your own story, eventually it does feel like something that is out there.
Yeah.
As if someone else did it. And that's kind of a nice feeling to get there. I for a long time I thought you're not going to feel that way until it is out there. But no, there just comes a point where it just seems real to you, like the place and the people have kind of taken on a life of their own. And of course the story gets a lot easier to work on then, because
absolutely
the people and the places kind of tell their own story to you as the author. So it makes it easier for you to just let them tell their story through what you're doing rather than you working it so hard.
And that's, I'm really trying, because my protagonist and probably, you almost would say a deuteronomist or whatever, the weird word for the secondary protagonist. Mm. There's a specific word for it that involves Deuteronomy. it's a hilarious word. It's like deuteronomist or something like that. But anyway, the secondary character here are both the strongest characters to me at this point. I have the best sense of them. And I'm at the point where I'm like, it's very important for me to do right by them as characters. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, even they, I only have the sketchiest vibe for. But like, everyone else is a throwaway, to a degree that in the second draft, some characters got written out. Some characters, I just arbitrarily just changed them completely from what, because I'm like, I don't even care yet. You guys aren't real people. You are the props that these two, but these two are important. So I'm trying to do a lot of that lately. I'm like, who are these people and what do they want? Because I really want to do well by them. I have realized, and this is, I feel weird about this. I almost feel like I should. I've been doing a lot of the whole sort of what's the point? Why am I making this when I can just wait for Jim Butcher to write another Dresden Files? You know, I mean, I'm stealing from so many places. This definitely has similarities to so many things. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's gotten scary because I've been thinking about what things should I consume, what books should I read, what TV shows I should watch to help. And I've hit on a couple of them that are shows that I purposely didn't like after watching a couple episodes, and so I didn't watch them. I'm like, oh, but this does seem really similar to that. But I think my biggest standout thing, or at least what I'm trying for, is there's a decidedly feminist bent to this. Yeah. And I wasn't doing that on purpose to start with, but I realized that I was unconsciously doing it on purpose. Mm-hmm. And that's what I don't want to lose, whatever else happens. There's a little bit of, like I'm sure so many genre fiction authors do when they start, me wanting to call out or lampshade tropes. I've got some of that already in there, where like I'm doing stuff just the way a lot of other fantasy novels, but then somebody at least stops and is like, you know, this is dumb. That's a secondary thing, but there's just a lot of issues that mostly are gender based, that everybody seems to be guilty of, and I'm trying to write something where at least in those specific instances my book is not. We'll see how I do with that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the very first novel I wrote, I wanted to avoid, you know, having, you know, I being a white, middle-class, Midwestern, Protestant male. Mm-hmm. I wanted to avoid overloading my story with people like that, because that's just what you do. You the people you put in your story look like you, sound like you, act like you, whatever. And I didn't want that to be true.
I was immediately like, what white guys were in your first story? And I'm like, oh, wait, I think I know three white guys out of the, like, 20 major characters you have in that.
Yeah. Well, in the story, there's, like, this group of immortal people, and there's a council, and the council represents these immortals throughout the whole world.
Yep.
So if you were to see this council, it would not be predominantly white. It would be predominantly not white, actually. However, in the first book...
Well, some of the vampires.
Right. In the first book, though, it didn't make sense for me to be really descriptive of that, because I tell the stories in third person imperfect, I guess is what they call it. So I had to wait clear until the third novel to really describe the gender and racial makeup of the group and to make it really what I thought would be representative of a world council. But still, from the very first book, I didn't know, I wasn't really thinking about it this way, but the way Gina Davis describes it is what she says, and I think I've mentioned this on the podcast, is, look, all you have to do, people, is before you make a movie, just look at your list of potential characters, and if it's not already 50% female, make it 50% female.
Yeah.
And if it's not already, you know, representative of whatever, like, you know, America, for example, racially, make it that way.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to interfere with the artistic integrity of your story to make half the characters female and to make, you know, 15% of the characters black or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just not going to do that. And I, you know, you often see people, like online especially, will criticize, oh, well, you know, they made some character black, or they made some character or woman who wasn't originally in something. Or even if it's not from an original property, they heard that this person decided to make a character female that wasn't beforehand, or black that wasn't beforehand. And you'll hear people complain about that, saying, oh, that's just politically correct. You should respect the artistic integrity, and you should make the character whatever. Well, I can tell you, the people who say this are obviously not storytellers and have never created anything in their lives, because if they had, they'd know that most of the time, there's absolutely no problem making a character female who was previously going to be male, or making a character black that was previously going to be white. No, it doesn't do anything to the creative process or to the integrity of your story at all. And that's kind of what Gina Davis is saying, is that for most stories, it's not going to change anything except make your story more representative, which is a way of making your story better. Representative stories are better, period, end of story. And
okay, that story wasn't that good.
That's true. But you see what I'm saying? And that's what she said. And before I ever knew she said anything like that, that's the way I looked at my own stories. I thought, you know what? When I sit here and I outline this whole thing out and I have my cast of characters, I'm going to double check and see how many of my characters are male, how many are female, how many are people of color, and how many aren't. And if it doesn't add up to representing, usually my stories take place in America, if it doesn't make sense to what is the makeup of an American population, then I'll change it, because it's not going to matter if this character is black when I originally wrote them white. It's not going to matter at all.
This was the thing back listening on Happy Jacks back in the day, talking about doing that with pre-generated characters for like a con game. And some people have straight up said, like, I just make all the characters, like I think it was a guy, and he said, I make them all male, and then as soon as I'm done, I pick half of them and I just switch everything to say female. Like, and that's a trade-off, and I'm having this issue with writing my protagonist is female. And the thing is also, at least in this first draft, my protagonist, other than being female, is a hell of a lot me when I was her age. Like, I'm putting it all, I'm fictionalizing it all, but she's basically me a couple years after college, still living in Grinnell, working for the newspaper. Like, her apartment is my actual apartment and stuff like that. And so I keep going back and forth between I don't have the experience of female. I need to take that into consideration when I'm writing for this character. This character is not just me, because there's all that component. And the other side of being like, don't overthink it. People are people.
Mm-hmm, that's
and
right.
She's just going to be a person.
Sure.
But it's a weird line to walk. But I apologize. While you were talking, I mean, I usually ignore you, but I usually pretend I'm paying attention. But when you were talking about the makeup issue, it reminded me that I had to find out if my nephew was a horrible racist asshole. And I had meant to do that earlier. And I did, and he is not.
Okay, that's good.
I feel like I need to explain this, though, because it was a little awkward. And, of course, it was because of Facebook. So, this morning, I happened to browse a little bit through Facebook, and my 19-year-old, white, male, possibly Christian, I'm not 100% sure, Used to be Christian. I don't know if he's not. I mean, he's in college, so it's always, you know, hard to tell. Posts a thing. That's a video of a man about his age, also white, also male, hence the term man, talking about how oppressed white Christian males are in this society nowadays, coupled with talking about how black people annoy him for certain reasons. My nephew shared this video, and all he said at the top was, "The root of the problem." Now, that could, and one would hope, mean he's saying it's people like this guy in this video that are the root of a lot of issues of institutionalized racism and other problems.
Mm-hmm.
Or he could be saying, listen to this guy, he'll describe for you what the root of the problem is.
Right.
And they're drastically different reactions from me. And so I'm sitting here, I'm like, I'm not going to, we'll agree to disagree if we have to, but I'm like, I just need to know where we are. So earlier today, I had sent him a little message, and I was like, just out of curiosity, I wasn't clear, what are you going for when you shared that? And so I had to go and look, and he actually wrote a pretty compelling response here in some serious detail that, yeah, he definitely was taking it the way I was hoping he was, and he's clearly paying attention to what's going on.
That's good.
Because it's not like an angry rant. It's the whole idea that clearly there's a lack of perspective. The word ignorance is put in here in not so much in a pejorative sense. So I'm pretty pleased about that. But no, when you were talking about that exact thing, I'm like, this reminds me, because it's a similar speech. It's, oh, PC people have made things terrible. No. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, when I was developing this, the new thing I'm working on, the Constable Blue Hawk thing, as I created new characters, I created a spreadsheet where I have, you know, a list of the characters on the left of the spreadsheet, and then I have these columns about what religion they're going to be, what race they're going to be, what gender they're going to be, what sexual orientation they're going to be, so that I'm keeping track of all of that, so that I know, is my story being too heteronormative? Is my story being too this or being too that?
Yeah.
Now, I don't actually anticipate that the sexual orientation of anybody is ever going to be an issue. However, I might have a scene where it's in somebody's house and my character's meeting their family. Well, are they going to be married? Are they going to be married to a person of the same sex or of the others?
Yep.
You know, and that might come up. And so now what I've got is I've got a spreadsheet. I've already got it decided. And as I'm making this thing, if I ever make it, and I notice, okay, so I've had my character visit three households. The person they were visiting was married in every case, and then every case they were married to a person of the same sex. So now it's about
trick-or-treating episode. So we go to a lot of
houses. No, I'm just saying. Actually, it could happen quite a bit because at the beginning of this story, she's living in a fairly rural setting and situation. I mean, she's going to
be a cave.
She's going to be visiting people's houses a lot. So, or at least getting to know their families or being introduced to their families. So this is something I want to be sensitive to because in this alternate reality, it's not a big deal for a person to be gay or to have a same-sex partner. Although there are certain rules about it that don't exist in our world, but I won't get into that. But anyway, so these are all things I want to have kind of set up ahead of time. But even as much work as that sounds like having a spreadsheet or whatever, it's not any work at all. I mean, when you're actually world building and creating all this stuff, this is the tiniest little thing to do. But when people talk about it online, you know, they make it sound like, oh, it's a big creative chore to decide that you're going to have this person be female instead of male. And they don't know what they're talking about because they've never done it.
It's the same idea that a generic human is white and is male and is straight.
Right. So if you make that character anything else, it's going to be a huge amount of work.
Exactly.
Nope. You know,
I'm doing something really cool in relation to this in my book, but it's super integral to the mythology, so I can't talk about it. But it's actually really cool, and you would love it. But I can't tell.
Well, I can't wait to learn about it. Did you know that The Closer was originally written for a male lead?
I did not.
Yep. And you know what they did to change it to a female lead so that Sarah...
Called Keira Sedgwick?
Kira Sedgwick so that she could play. They just changed it. That's it. Now I think they might have changed some things about romance. I mean, they wanted to make the person heterosexual, so they might have changed that stuff.
Yeah.
But other than that, they just wrote it exactly the way it was.
Have we talked about Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal, the webcomic, on here before?
I think I've heard about that before.
I mean, for good or for bad, I originally could not stand him, and now I've grown to absolutely love him. But the big thing is all of his couples are arbitrarily determined, like he fucking rolls a die or something, in terms of both their gender and their racial makeup.
Okay.
So, like, any scene that he's got that has a couple, even if it's... Because he'll have ones that are about sex and things like that. Sometimes it's two dudes. Sometimes it's a woman and a woman. Like sometimes one of them's black and one of them... It's just all over the place every time. There's no pattern to it. There is no most common one he does. He just does it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome. And it's... Not only is it not problematic or anything like that... It's unobtrusive to the degree that I read hundreds of these before I finally was like, hey!
That's exactly right.
And he'll have things that no part of it... Like I said, he'll have stuff that's seriously about like their sex life and stuff, but it'll be about like... It's a joke about a married couple and their sex life. At no point does it play a part that it's two women.
That's right. Or two men, or two whatever. Exactly right. That's exactly right.
And he just does. And I haven't even ever seen him comment. I mean, he comments on his stuff all the time. I mean, he has like mouse overs and things that say something about what he did. It doesn't come up.
But
it's
this
so
is
weird.
This is what amazes me. It's so ridiculously easy to make something representative. It usually makes it better, or at the very least, it doesn't make a difference at all. Like you're pointing out, there's no reason not to do it. And everybody who complains about it is not a creator themselves and are kind of making fools out of themselves when they talk about it because they're just showing how ignorant they are. So that's why it's such a big deal to me when it's not done.
There is a
burden. Because it's so easy to do.
There is a burden of awareness.
I suppose so.
If you've got denial, especially about issues like that, it's harder not to face them when you're deciding to face them in your creation.
But
to say I'm going to make a conscious effort to do this is to say if I don't make a conscious effort, I've clearly got some unconscious biases. And
which
not
I don't
everybody's
know
willing to admit to that.
But why is that? Because it's just how it is. I mean, is people just going to beat themselves up about it? Or
usually.
Well,
people want to think of themselves as good people and smart people. People want to think of themselves as totally not racist.
You mean people want to think of themselves as not actually being people, because everybody's got issues. Nobody's perfectly smart or perfectly good or perfectly anything. So if you find out something about yourself that's not perfectly whatever, you're just realizing you're human.
No, I don't like that.
So you're saying that people actually want to think of themselves as being better than other people?
Well,
because surely they don't think other people are that good.
A lot of common psychology. Yeah, no, people totally want to think they're better than other people.
Like everybody else?
Yeah.
Come on.
No.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'm not saying that they do, and I'm not saying that they will admit to it, and I'm also not even saying that they're necessarily aware of it, but they absolutely do. But classic philosophical point here would say they don't want to think of themselves as human and fallible because it makes them aware of their mortality and death terrifies us all. That's old school. We're not going to go into that now. We got like 7 minutes. We haven't even friggin' drawn into that yet. So we have to do that.
Well, that suggests that it's some universal human tendency, which I don't think it is. I think our culture maybe is.
No, I think it's 100% of humanity.
Oh, no, you're wrong about that. I don't say anything like that very often, but I'm going to say it this time.
No, 100%. The point is, I'm still acknowledging tacitly that it doesn't apply to you. Because I didn't mention you.
Okay, Jasmine says.
Jasmine, this is your chance to redeem yourself.
If you were growing up today.
I am growing up today. A little bit.
From childhood, I think she means.
Right. If I was one of those kids today.
Do you think you would have an easier or harder time than when you actually grew up?
Oh, my goodness. Kids have it so much easier. Mm. In my day, we would go to work in the morning, do our paper route for 4 hours, get into school. I don't know. Only very recently do I feel like I'm really grasping just how different it is to grow up now than it was to grow up in my time. There's factors of post 9/11. There's factors of the internet, of course. There's too many things. Technology is a huge one. Changes in social norms. Like, I knew one gay kid in my high school, and he was in the closet to everybody except for like three of us. And I'm not saying gay students don't still get bullied and all that. I'm just saying that's not the game plan nowadays. Nobody would be like, oh my god, we have a gay student? Like, that would not happen in my same high school today. But then there's so many other complicating factors. I've said this before. I was kind of a creepy, obsessive stalker boy. I was one of those who developed crushes on everybody. And I can see now I was kind of creepy about that. I can't even imagine if I had the internet. Oh my god, I would have so many... I would have been arrested at this point. I would have so many restraining orders because I would develop such huge crushes on all these girls and would cyber-stalk the hell out of them thinking I was being the nice guy. Like, the kind of trouble I would have gotten in if I'd had the real internet during my teenage years, I can't even imagine. I probably would have got murdered. Probably would have gone to visit an online friend, got murdered. Sounds like something I'd do.
So you'd be worse off then, is what you're saying.
I think so. I would be, which is not... but that's not harder or easier. Like, I don't feel like that. I don't feel like hard or easy is a good thing. I feel like I would do more poorly now than the way I did, but I don't know how it is for kids nowadays. I'll ask my niece. She's a good... I'll ask my nephew after I congratulate him for not being a racist prick and tell him that I talked about it on the podcast.
It's hard to say. I mean, we... You know, all my friends had cable and we didn't. And that didn't matter to me at all. If, similarly, all my friends had devices and the internet and crap and we didn't and I didn't care, then it probably would have just been the same for me.
Yeah, I don't feel like that was ever a thing. Well, I don't know. I always wanted the toys my friend had, but he let me play with them.
Well, we...
But, I mean, there wasn't a lot of, like... I don't have a lot of class history. I don't have a lot of awareness of being particularly better off or particularly poorer than anybody else I knew.
Well,
I didn't have cable, but it never occurred to me that we didn't have cable because my parents were cheap or that we didn't have cable because we were too poor.
Oh, well, I didn't think that about not having cable. I thought that about not having a lot of other things we didn't have, but it didn't bother me.
Yeah, but I feel like you actually were poor.
We kind of were, yeah.
In all the things I didn't have were specifically because my parents didn't wish me to. I don't believe there was anything that my parents were like, we would totally do that for you if we had the money.
Well, that's true. Cable TV was not one of those things. But there were a lot of other things that we might have had, but we didn't because of not having the money. But you know, if... Again, there were other examples of stuff other kids had technology-wise that we didn't have, and I didn't care, and it didn't bother me. So, you know, if it would have been the same kind of situation growing up now, I don't see how it would have been different for me now as opposed to then. But getting away from that, let's say for the sake of argument that I was growing up now and my parents... I can't imagine them doing this, but for whatever reason, they did get us all these devices and all this stuff that we had all the same technological stuff that other kids had. It seems to me that I would be worse off, quite a bit worse off. I don't see how it would benefit me growing up the way I was and the way I thought about things. I think I would probably be depressed a lot more.
That's a terrifying
thought. Just because I would know... Let me explain why I say that. I often learned things about my peers that made me very sad. I came to find out many, many years later, you know, sometime around my 25th high school reunion... I got actually, it happened after my mom passed away. Her funeral was back home, and some of my old classmates came to the funeral, and I got reacquainted with them. And one in particular told me some things about my peers that I hadn't known before.
And there is my supper. I can't even pretend it's for Trish this time. Just put it on the floor. It's fine. Szechuan House tonight, people. Szechuan House, Iowa City's most authentic Chinese restaurant.
And learning these things made me sad when I heard them. This was like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago now. But had I known them when I was in high school, I would have been really sad. And if the technology that we have today would have kind of allowed me to know my peers' business like that, I think I would have been very upset all the time and depressed. And I don't know how I would have acted out on that depression. I don't know what kinds of things I would have done being sad like that all the time. I just don't think it would have been good for me to know everyone's business all the time, or for people to want to know my business all the time when I didn't want them to know. And of course, this is all assuming a lot of things stay the same when really, if you or I were born, 15 years ago instead of how long ago we were born, we would be completely different people. We would know completely different people. We would be exposed to completely different things.
But we'd still be doing this fucking podcast.
Well, the point is we could easily be better off or worse off either way. I mean, it's like you said, there are a lot of things. It's hard to imagine that queer kids aren't a little bit better off now because of ways they might be able to express themselves that they didn't have before. Like you said, they're still bullied and stuff, and kids sometimes still don't feel like they can come out of the closet. But surely they have more opportunities for that now than they did. It's hard to imagine how young girls aren't a little bit better off. Still not nearly as in a good a situation as I'd like to see, but probably better off.
Did you smell the food, kitten?
Than young girls when we were growing up. All of that.
Don't unplug that.
Seems important, but there are also downsides, specifically to technology and specifically to. I mean, everyone knows that I don't really like the way our culture is organized or how it treats people. And the way technology is today, kids are assaulted with those cultural messages more often and more effectively than they ever were before. So it's hard for me to imagine that kids today are better off than kids were previously, but there's just a lot of things to consider. It's a complex question for sure.
We are way over time.
Sorry.
So the net result is, thank you, Jasmine, for making us cry. Everyone else, listen again next week. Like us on Facebook because we get a strange satisfaction out of that. And yes, kitten, I know you're there. That's the reason you're not comfortable in that spot is because that you're not supposed to be sitting there. And listen next week. Not you, kitten, listeners. You can listen with us. You know you don't have your own earbuds, right?
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.